This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Bill Nelson's never faced anything like what he's about to face with Rick Scott.
Governor Rick Scott's big announcement on his likely bid for U.S. Senate is out this week, and his former spokesman Brian Burgess weighs in.
Biased or not, Rick Scott is going to be prepared.
Former Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine addresses students at Florida State University.
I believe that if the people of Florida, they want recreational marijuana, if they vote for it, if the legislature votes for it, I will be the governor that carries forth their wishes.
And the battle over the restoration of voting rights for former felons continues, with the state appealing a federal judge's order to find a better process.
And honestly, I expect whoever loses at this level will appeal to the United States Supreme Court. So this may be, this particular case and issue may take 2 or 3 years to work itself out.
Clemency lawyer Reggie Garcia joins the program. All that and more coming up on episode 144 of The Rotunda. Florida Governor Rick Scott makes his big announcement via social media on his plans after his term ends in November. Inviting supporters to join his announcement stream via Facebook, Scott looks ahead and all eyes are on his likely challenge to Florida's Democratic U.S. Senator Bill Nelson.
When I have an opponent, I assume that they are the toughest opponent and I run like there's no tomorrow.
Okay, and knowing that the money that he can bring, what do you think of the fundraising effort that it'll take from you to kind of match that? How much money do you think it'll take to win a race like that?
Then that means that I run double time like there's no tomorrow.
Will Scott be able to deny Bill Nelson a fourth term in Washington? And what about Scott's ability to crisscross the state in his private jet and campaign, which even Nelson seems to see it might pose some challenges?
Well, of course, during the week, when we're in session, I have to be in Washington. So that's my job, is to be in session and to vote.
Governor Rick Scott came out of nowhere when he ran and won the governor's mansion in 2011. He started from the bottom and now he's here. Scott is wealthy, a multimillionaire who is often triggered to mention his upbringing in public housing before crowds like the Black Legislative Caucus. Scott is worth around $150 million. Bill Nelson is probably around $3 to $4 million. Scott used about $60 million of his own money when he first ran for office and won. For his re-election so far, Nelson has raised around $10 million, and both campaigns have been doing well on fundraising.
Shift away. So session's over. We're now in full-blown campaign mode. I mean, you've got fundraisers, you got people announcing, paperwork's getting filed. Let's turn to the biggest race in Florida. It's going to be the Senate race.
During a recent appearance on the Florida internet and television program Phi TV with Brad Swanson, the pundits, including Politico's Matt Dixon, Brian Burgess of The Capitalist, and I had the pleasure of joining the crew to weigh in on the Senate race. Here's Brad Swanson kicking things off with Brian Burgess, who was actually Governor Rick Scott's spokesman and is a GOP consultant.
Is Governor Scott positioned to not only run, but win the U.S. Senate, if he declares?
Speaking from experience?
Yeah,
of course.
Right. I mean, right. Might be a little biased down there, but go ahead and give
it. It doesn't matter whether biased or not. Rick Scott is going to be prepared. He's not going into the 2018 Senate race if he's going to run, and I think we all assume he is. Mm-hmm. He's gonna be prepared, and I shouldn't even say gonna be. He is prepared, knowing him, knowing how he operates, knowing his mentality and the people around him. He has been prepared. He has been positioning. So how is he positioned? He's very well positioned, I think. Right. Is he gonna win? I don't know. It's a very tough race for him. But Bill Nelson's never faced anything like what he's about to face with Rick Scott.
Yeah. What we've seen is the preparation is in play. He's been preparing for this. It's been trickling out over time, and there were some missteps. When you talk about oil drilling, and we're seeing how that is being played out, like who did what when, with the secretary coming down and declaring that Florida is off the list of considerations. We're seeing there is an attempt to be close on the national issues with the president, and we'll see how that plays out. So we've been seeing him showing some steps toward keeping in the national spotlight.
How's Politico's handicap on this race?
I mean, I have no idea. To Brian's point, it's going to be very tough. Governor Scott's the best political animal the state has from a fundraising perspective, from being able to hit every media market in his private plane to a laser-like focus on his talking points. He's gone from sort of a political outsider to one of the best politicians Florida has. But at the same time, Bill Nelson's a folksy Democrat who speaks the language of North Florida, and he has had weak opponents, but he's also won statewide races here, and he's the only Democrat who's been able to do that. So I don't know who's going to win that race, but I think Governor Scott is certainly a formidable challenge. And Bill Nelson was running against the likes of Connie Mack, and there's no Hooters bar fights from Governor Scott's record. So you're gonna have to dig a lot deeper.
You're all quietly
hushed up.
Yeah. You're gonna have to dig a lot deeper with Governor Scott than just going to some Jacksonville police reports.
Let's dip into the governor's race. By the way, polling shows Floridians are not dialed into this race just yet. However, we caught up with one candidate recently, and our awesome intern at Gomes Media, Logan Tafe, met up with former Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine on the campus of Florida State University, where he was talking to students about his run for governor. Hey there, Logan.
Hey, Tramiel. Thanks for having me on the podcast. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us about the mayor's visit.
Philip Levine recently came to FSU to speak to students about the importance of education, investing in Florida, marijuana, and creating a progressive ecosystem.
It looks like education was top of mind during his stop. No?
He said that it's important to excel on all fronts, especially healthcare and education. By having all components, you attract entrepreneurs and skilled workers.
We can't attract great companies to Florida. We can't have a 21st century economy unless we have the best education in the country. You look at Amazon. They came around Florida, said they want to look for a second headquarters. In the entire state of Florida, they only picked one city, Miami. And there are those that say that's because Jeff's from Miami, Jeff Bezos. But the bottom line is they didn't pick any other city, and they wrote in their proposal how important education was.
What was the takeaway? Are there any major points that he mentioned?
Former Mayor Levine was adamant on getting across that during his time as mayor, he decriminalized marijuana, and that if his constituents wanted medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, if they put it on the ballot and it was voted for, he would sign it into law.
Thank you, Logan Tafe, for that update from the campus of Florida State University. Levine's Democratic opponents are Gwen Graham, Chris King, and Andrew Gillum. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramiel Gomes, bringing you stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Each week, this program is supported by listeners like you. Please send your generous contribution to rotundapodcast.com. It helps us to expand our reach. The program is featured on newspaper websites throughout the state, and we couldn't do it without your support. Follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, at Rotunda Podcast. And as always, thanks for your support. Welcome back to the program. Attorney General Pam Bondi filed an appeal last week with a federal judge who ruled Florida's current system for restoring voting rights to people after their release from prison is unconstitutional. Bondi told U.S. District Judge Mark Walker that she, Governor Rick Scott, and other members of the state's clemency board are appealing the court's February 1st order halting Florida's rights restoration system. Walker said the system gave the board unfettered discretion and called it flawed. But Bondi's team of lawyers argues that Walker's request that they come up with a new system by April 26 is unreasonable. Tallahassee-based clemency lawyer Reggie Garcia said the legal battle ahead could cause the backlog of cases to get even worse. Let's hear more of what he has to say about all of this.
Thank you, Tramiel, and I enjoy the podcast and all you do to keep up with things here in the state capitol.
So what do you make of the process that's in question? I've sat through many clemency board hearings, and you see these people come up and they plead their case. And first of all, they have to wait for this opportunity. And
it's up to the governor and cabinet to decide their fate as to whether they can vote or not. What do you make of the process as is?
Well, that's a good point. And Judge Walker was very troubled by what he called the governor's quote-unquote unfettered discretion to deny clemency for anyone, which the governor, under the current rules, can singularly do. Any approval of voting rights or other types of clemency, the governor has to be on the prevailing side, and then two of the three members of the cabinet have to concur. So that's the current process. Keeping in mind the voting rights that we're talking about here are one of the civil rights. Every convicted felon, and we think there's 1.7 million, give or take, in Florida, which is obviously a big number in a big state, they've lost their right not just to vote, but to serve on a jury, which is very important, to seek elected office, and they've also lost firearm authority under a combination of state and federal law. So what we're talking about here, and Judge Walker's ruling, and Attorney General Bondi's appeal and challenge of that ruling are just not narrowly in a sense that the others are unimportant, but are focused just on the voting rights, not all other types of clemency. So what is the current system? The current system says every convicted felon must wait at least 5 years, and in the case of 35 very serious felonies, 7 years before they can apply for restoration of all civil rights. 5 years can be done without a hearing, meaning the governor and cabinet administratively can approve that. Anybody who has to wait 7 years, again, if they've committed and been convicted of one of the 35 enumerated felonies, they have to wait 7 years and they must go to a hearing. And Judge Walker was troubled again by the unfettered discretion and what he alleges are a lack of standards. I would argue that there are six very defined standards that govern what the cabinet and the governor do, and I've had the privilege of arguing these cases now before four governors for 20 plus years.
So do you agree with the process as is? Where do you stand? Do you think the standards that the governor and cabinet is going through right now is just and shouldn't change?
I respectfully think we should do something to deal with the backlog because there is a significant delay in people getting an answer to begin with. So one issue is should they have to wait at all before they apply? And that's a legitimate difference of opinion. When these rules were put in place in 2011, law enforcement felt strongly that there should be some waiting period for someone to establish rehabilitation. Members of the public, including legislators, not exclusively, but including members of the African American and Hispanic caucuses, felt strongly that because a disproportionate number of minorities are caught in the criminal justice system and impacted by these rules, that there should be no waiting period at all. And some people, including me, argued that there had to be some middle ground somewhere in between. So do I think they can improve the rules so that they go faster? Absolutely. One of the ideas is more frequent meetings, more of them being done administratively without a hearing. In the past, some governors have used what's called a consent agenda. So I think there's a lot between the current rules and what we may end up with, and we'll pivot if it's okay, to what the voters will see in the November general election ballot, which is Amendment 4, somewhat complicating all this, but showing you how hot all this is. We've got a federal judge saying the current system is unconstitutional, and now an appeal and a request for a stay, meaning allow the current rules to work while the appellate courts work this out, which could take certainly months, if not years. And then more than 800,000 voters have signed a petition putting what is now going to be called Amendment 4 on the November, I believe, 6th general election ballot. So the public will get a chance to vote on a new constitutional system that gives voting rights back to all convicted felons except, and there's two exceptions written into the proposed constitutional amendment, murder and sexual crime. So the legislature, if it passes, and remember it has to pass with 60%, we're here doing a radio interview. Only a couple of political junkies like us would know this, but in 06, they passed a constitutional amendment that said future constitutional amendments were no longer could be passed by a simple majority, but have to have a supermajority of 60%. So if Amendment 4 passes by 60% in November, then the legislature would come back in their spring of 19 session and do implementing rules there. So that is both an opportunity for voters to weigh in directly on this, but also an additional complicating factor that we have a current set of rules. We have potentially, not potentially, an actual appeal of those current set of rules now. And then we have potentially new rules, regardless of how the appeal works out after November.
All right, U.S. District Judge Mark Walker did not play with the pushback from the governor and the attorney general in their appeal. He flat out denied them on their request to push back from April 26. That ruling, somehow make sure you find a way to read it. Walker pretty much made fun of the appeal, saying it's rooted in neither common sense or reality. He even said the court does not play games. More so in his last paragraph, he said, "This court is not going to sit on defendant's motion and run out the clock. If the 11th Circuit finds that a clemency scheme granting unfettered discretion to elected officials with personal stakes in shaping the electorate over plaintiff's First and 14th Amendment rights passes constitutional muster, this court must accept that holding. Until that day, if it ever comes, this court denies defendant's request for a stay." Obviously, this information and Judge Walker's denial came after my interview with Reggie Garcia. But here's a little bit more about Garcia's background.
All right, well, Reggie Garcia, thanks for taking this time to break all of that down. It's a little complicated, but I'm glad to see you following this. Tell us a little bit more about you. You've written two books. You are the expert on this issue.
Well, thank you, Tramiel. You're very kind. I grew up in Tampa in a law enforcement and medical home. My parents were in law enforcement and medicine. I went to undergrad and law school in Gainesville at the University of Florida.
Go Gators.
That's right. I did start working on these cases 20 plus years ago. And frankly, I found there is so much confusion that the families of the convicted felons themselves, the vast majority of which who have turned their lives around, made mistakes in their early and mid-20s, are now working hard, have families, paying taxes, owning property, contributing to society. They need not just voting rights, but civil rights and in some cases pardons to get state and federal licenses, to be able to get employment, bonding, insurance, heck, even to volunteer at youth events and at school and in nonprofits in this post 9/11 world we live in. So clemency is very important. Thank you for mentioning the books. The first one was called How to Leave Prison Early to Assist Current Inmates on Four Very Specific Release Strategies. The second book, called Second Chances, is about pardons, firearm authority, and restoration of civil rights, again, to help folks that most of which who never went to prison but are convicted felons. You could have a minor marijuana possession, you could bounce a $350 check, you could have a minor property crime, you could have a criminal mischief. Certainly, all felonies are serious, but I think we all agree violent felonies are much more serious, especially if somebody during adolescence or youth, we don't want to criminalize adolescence, as some people have said, made some mistakes when they were younger. So clemency is not all, but it's one opportunity for people to have a second chance and to help them, particularly with licenses and employment, which then makes them less likely to reoffend, and we don't have to do this all over again as taxpayers.
Special thanks once again to Reggie Garcia, a Tallahassee-based clemency lawyer, for joining us here on The Rotunda. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program by hitting the donate button. Also, you can suggest topics and story ideas. Be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramiel Gomes.